Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello, our wonderful Musicals with Cheese listeners. I hope you're having a wonderful Monday morning. What you're listening to right now is a Schmigadoon breakdown that is currently happening on our Patreon, and we thought you guys deserved a little taste of what you're missing out on the paid side. So this is our first episode of the Schmigadoon breakdown between myself and our wonderful video editor who's been helping us out with Patreon content, Elizabeth Esten, who is wonderful. This is a hilarious discussion, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. And if you want to hear the rest of the series, come join us on Patreon. There's a lot of more other cool stuff there, too. Yeah, I think that's about it. All right, check it out. Enjoy. Schmigadoon!
Corn pudding!
Can we opt out of this?
My gal loves corn pudding. She eats it constantly. Sometimes I get to wondering, does she love it more than me?
Does she love it more than me? My guy loves corn pudding. I've got the recipe. So if he wants my pudding, he'll have to marry me. Oh, he'll have to marry me.
Hello, patrons, and welcome to this brand new mini-series of something. And please welcome my wonderful co-host for Patreon with Cheese. It is our wonderful video editor and brand new member of the Musicals with Cheese family. It is Liz Esten. Yeah!
Yay! Hello. I'm happy to be here.
I picked you because you're the only person that could literally match up with the dry sensibility of Andrew. I have never met anyone with like a dry sense of humor quite like his, aside from you.
Yeah, I hope I live up to Andrew's mighty shoes and fluffy hair.
Yes, this isn't like we're replacing Andrew. It's just on the Patreon stuff. He can't quite find the time. And Liz is wonderful. And I feel like more people should get to know her. So before we get into it, anything you want them to know about you, Liz? Do you like long walks on the beaches or anything crazy like that?
I'm not much of a crazy person. No, pretty boring.
Dang. Wow. But you and your fella did just go on a vacation where you were trapped in like this little weird universe where it was a musical. Am I right about
this?
And
yes. Me and my fella, we went on a hike to work out our relationship. Been a few years. We don't like each other very much, clearly. So we ended up in this weird ass town, and I don't know, amazed we got out.
Oh my gosh. In case you haven't gone by our wonderful improv skills, we're talking about Schmigadoon, which is a brand new show on Apple TV that is a pastiche of like classic musicals. And Liz and I have watched the show, and we're going to spit out our opinions at you. Liz, what is your relationship with like musicals, specifically classic musicals?
I don't have a huge relationship with classic musicals. I watched Sound of Music as a kid, but I didn't like it after Act One because the Nazis showed up. So my mom was like, "Why don't you watch the second half with me?" And I'm like, "But it's sad and full of Nazis, so I don't want to watch it." So I just never watched it. Now my mom tries to get me to watch White Christmas every year, and I was like, no.
I tried White Christmas this year. I could not get through it.
No, it's not good.
It's a rough sit.
I don't like it personally, but you know, it's just me. I have a working knowledge of classic musicals. I haven't seen a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I had to watch Oklahoma recently for work-related reasons, but otherwise, I don't know a ton. I know I have a working knowledge of who's in them and what the tropes are, but, like, I haven't seen Carousel because I watched your video about how it's problematic, so I didn't go
I was about to say.
Yeah.
That show's got some issues, but it's such a beautiful score.
Yeah,
literally one of the most gorgeous scores on the planet.
On my list for years has been getting back to the classic Rodgers and Hammerstein stuff, but I don't have a ton of knowledge, but I know enough to understand when a Music Man reference is directly in front of me. I'm like, this is the Music Man. I've never seen it, but I know it's the Music Man.
I feel like that's the problem with a lot of classic musicals is they've been parodied so much that you literally don't even need to see the original to get the parody.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as you see a kid with a lisp, it's like, Music Man, got it.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I didn't get that. I did get the part where he talks too fast and convinces the town to do a thing, but I didn't know the list thing was from Music Man. Now I know.
Yeah, little Ron Howard played the little boy and he had a lisp in the Music Man movie. It was. I mean, it's cute if it's not goddamn annoying at the same time, you know?
Yeah, it probably got annoying after an hour.
But the premise of Schmigadoon is two doctors, Melissa and Josh, go on a backpacking trip in an attempt to patch up their failing relationship, only to find themselves still arguing? A backpacking trip didn't solve your relationship issues? Who could have guessed? They get lost and soon discover a magical town called Schmigadoon, which is perpetually trapped in a Golden Age-style musical, and slowly realize they cannot leave until they find true love. The title and concept is a parody of the 1947 musical Brigadoon. Now, do you know anything about Brigadoon?
I know it's called Brigadoon.
And that is the main song. It's not a good musical. It's a learner and low classic. I recently watched the Patrick Wilson, Stephanie J. Block production, where they get literally the most Irish people to be in the most Irish musical of all time. But it's basically like he falls in love with a girl that lives in this fantasy world, and he wants to disappear with her, and then he does.
Oh,
Irish.
That makes sense now.
Yeah, so that's the premise. They're trapped in this fantasy world, and they think they want out, but then they stay in, probably, if they're going to go with the Brigadoon way.
Yeah, and Kristen Chenoweth's lipstick is here to attack us.
Yes, I think that this is a rare show where the main characters I could give a shit about, but every one of the backup players I am so interested in.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you've watched The Prom. You've kind of seen
Keegan-Michael Key. I've watched The Prom many times. Many
yes,
times.
Because of the video I had you made, and other reasons, of course. But Keegan-Michael Key, I don't know what it is about him. He must love musicals a lot, but he does not fit in the world of any musical I can imagine.
No, he's cast really well because he clearly likes musicals, but after a certain year, he likes musicals.
Yeah.
Ish.
I can't even say that. He doesn't have a stage presence in the same way that you put Kristen Chenoweth on screen for 5 seconds. You feel her vibe to the back of the room. He cannot play heightened reality very well, which is a big problem with The Prom. But here he's kind of leaning into that strength a little bit more because he is the odd man out.
Yeah.
Whereas Cecily Strong, I think, really kind of does lean into the heightened reality side of it a bit more and kind of plays it up a lot more.
Yeah, you can tell how much she loved this entire concept, how much she's overjoyed to be in a musical, even as a person who isn't in it.
And I feel like she's, between our two leads, the one that gets more developed as someone with a goal.
Oh, yeah. She has this belief in love that Josh doesn't.
Yes.
She believes that true love concept that we all grew up with the Disney princess movies, or even, especially even the classic musicals. In the first episode, you see them watching Singing in the Rain, and
yes,
he's like, I don't give a shit. And she's like, watch the thing, please. Please watch the thing, which is me trying to get my boyfriend to watch musicals. He does not like musicals that much.
My girlfriend... I just had dinner with Brent over the weekend, and his girlfriend turned to my girlfriend and was like, so do you like musicals? She's like, I like the good ones, which is the best response. She is not going to sit down and watch The Prom and get anything out of it.
Oh, yeah.
She will watch Fiddler on the Roof, be like, yeah, I see why that's important, but I didn't love it.
Yeah,
Which is not a bad response if you're a casual viewer.
Yeah.
But which side of that love argument are you on, Liz? Do you believe in the true love you're destined for, the one you're destined for? Or the more whatever happens, happens?
I was single for many years. I was single for 18 years. And then I dated a guy who shall not be named. And then a year later, I started dating my current boyfriend. So prior to single cranky me, I would have been like, love is stupid. I hate people. Go away. Don't talk. Now I'm a little more like, I kind of agree, but I also am like, things happen. I'm more on the things happen for a reason end of things. It happens. It's not like a destiny thing that we're all destined to find, like the one we're meant to be with. Like, we're all destined to end up where we end up in our life, whether that a partner or with a cat. So.
I love that attitude, and I agree with, I think you and I line up, or I think you're gonna end up the way that you're always meant to end up with.
Yeah.
Like, no matter what that is. But a lot of people are just like, nope, everything's random, God doesn't exist, there's no randomness, and that's fine too, but that's just not the way I prefer to live my life.
Yeah, it happens. Things just fall on your lap when you least expect it. Like, that happened to me with my boyfriend. I was just like randomly like, I'm not looking for a boyfriend, I'm looking for a cute boy, and then it's like, oh, I met my boyfriend.
I got a cute boy and a boyfriend,
yeah.
Which is always pretty good.
And he's still here.
You get that two in one.
Somehow.
Hey, cut that out.
I'm kidding.
And so I don't understand the idea of, I mean, let's just break down the episode. So they meet through weirdly magical means where he is able to, like, know that all the candy is going to fall out of a machine with, like, a kick.
If you think about that, how many times has he how many times has he emptied the snack machine to nothing and pissed off a lot of workers whose job it is to build the snack machine? That's someone's job.
I mean, let's be clear. It's not a guy that works in that building. It's a guy that shows up from, like, the Lay's factory.
Yeah, but still, that guy from the Lay's factory has a heart, damn it.
I'm more worried that he got fired. Like, they're like, okay, all the candy was gone, but there was no money in the thing.
Oh yeah, there was no money. Yeah, he could have gotten fired.
Well, a Lay's employee got fired for Keegan-Michael Key stealing.
Yeah,
to get Lay's.
Keegan-Michael Key is taking away all the Lay's employees' job by kicking.
You know what? Yeah, honestly, it was not worth the pussy, Keegan-Michael Key.
No.
And honestly,
and I love Cecily Strong. Not worth it.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like maybe you could have had a personality, you know, you could have, like, you didn't need a big show like that, but
yeah.
that musical, that's kind of what bothers me, where there's musical logic outside of the musical world.
Yeah.
Like, that was the kind of, it threw me off.
Yeah, it was weird, like, it opens with the magical logic and how the 1 year anniversary,
yeah.
He arranges to have a ton of snacks dumped on their dinner table, I guess is cute.
That is fine. Like, that at least is a cute idea that it, like, would pay off. Like, if it doesn't come off like a mistake, like when Michael Key tells her to kick it. Like, it feels like, oh, that's something he planned. If it just kind of happened, oh, that's neat. That's not the way it frames it. But the relationship's not doing great, because how long were they together? Like, a year and some change?
The four years and some change.
4 years.
With the state of my current relationships, that made me feel good.
I mean, you're doing good.
Yeah,
you're
fine.
Doing good in comparison.
But it was just like, wow, this is what could have been.
And they decide to go on a backpacking trip in the mountains. And I don't know about you, call me unromantic piece of shit. But if I wanted to end a relationship, that I'd go backpacking into the mountains. That isn't something to stabilize you.
No.
In fact, that's just insanity. Like, why would you think that would help you in any way?
No, it's like those couples that are like, we need to have a baby to fix it, which is the more extreme version, but it's still like...
It is.
Why would you go backpacking in the woods with someone you don't like?
That, I mean, can't run away. You got to face your troubles. There's an argument, but it's a bad argument. Let's just say that.
No, there's, like, if you're going to break up. Like, don't delay it. Like, Keegan-Michael Key's character is giving
me
the guy from Midsommar vibes at times.
Oh, my God, you're right. I knew there was something that was off
about him.
He was
just, like, he didn't want to be there. He was, like, except for he actually kind of liked Cecily Strong, whereas the Midsommar guy didn't like Florence Pugh, like, at all.
How do you not like Florence Pugh?
Yeah, exactly. Like, what's wrong with you?
I mean, Florence Pugh. She's got one fault, and that's her boyfriend. That is literally my opinion on Florence Pugh.
Yeah, no, it's strange. I'm fine with it. Like, the age gap's weird, but she's happy. Like, whatever. I'm not gonna.
She could pick literally anyone in the world, but
yeah, she could date any person who's breathing, dating Zach Braff, which is fine. Do what you do. He's rich.
Yeah, I guess.
You got that Garden State money.
Live in the Florence Pugh universe. I feel that. It bothers me every time she pops up on his podcast and he just refers to her as, oh, look, it's my girlfriend. I'm like, no, that is Academy Award nominee Florence Pugh, you piece of shit.
And she was nominated for Midsommar, not Little Women, just then.
And in your mind?
No, there's this idea that people are nominated for Oscars for movies that are more traditional when they had better performances in non-traditional movies. Like, Alicia Vikander is nominated for, I think the Danish girl, but she,
yeah,
in everyone's heart, she was nominated for Ex Machina when she played the robot.
Mm-hmm. Great movie.
Great movie. So no way she's going to get nominated for Ex Machina, but she was going to, could have get nominated for the Danish girl. So Florence Pugh couldn't get nominated for Midsommar because the Academy hates horror movies, but in everyone's heart and Twitter, she was nominated for Midsommar for what she did.
I want to say, though, her performance in Little Women is great. Like, that's an Oscar-worthy performance in its own way.
Yeah, yeah. I like, still haven't seen
it. I agree. I like Midsommar more as a movie, but her performance in Little Women, she has to play a 7-year-old at one point, and it's just normal-ass Florence Pugh doing it all with performance, and it's great.
So it's not like Anthony Ramos in Hamilton, where he's like, I'm 9!
It kind of is, but it works.
Yeah. It's like Brooklyn Nine-Nine meme of Terry Crews with the, I'm a 9-year-old boy sign.
Yes, it is exactly like that, but also somehow it works in this weird movie.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about the characters outside of our two leads. So they get into the Schmigadoon world, which is this musical world where everyone's singing and it just is a musical. And they set up the rules very clearly in this first episode where it is non-diegetic songs. The only people that are aware that they're songs is our two outsiders, which is an interesting thing. What is that first song we have in this one? It is Schmigadoon, where they take the title Brigadoon and then they put it into an Oklahoma style song where it's like Schmigadoon.
It sounds just like that.
It's like they were all here right now.
Oh,
where
yeah.
They introduce every single character very well, and the trope that they're representing, ranging from Aaron Tveit as the bad boy Billy Bigelow insert. You've got Kristen Chenoweth as Mrs. Shin, wife to the Reverend, played by Fred Armisen. So many great characters. I'm just trying to rile through.
Alan Cumming as the mayor.
Anytime he does an American accent, like the most American accent on the planet, I am in heaven.
Yeah. Also, it's strange because I'm working in cabaret right now. And so, like, I'm looking at Alan Cumming wearing, like, a jock strap covering his dick. And then I'm, like, watching this and, like, oh, he's an old man.
He got old, but he looks great.
He looks amazing. Incredible. Still. But it's like, oh, wow, what a transformation.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Alan Cumming, probably not the nicest guy in the world in real life, but my God, I love seeing him in media.
Oh, yeah.
And his wife, Anne, played by Anne Harada, who is also very good. I think a little underused so far. We've only watched up to episode 2. You guys will hear our opinion on episode 2 next week. So far, and then we got Dove Cameron as like the farmer's daughter.
Yeah.
And we set up probably the best running gag in the entire show, which is Pete constantly getting shot.
He's constantly getting injured, no matter where people are.
I really hope that in the last episode, like, it's he gets a, like, song of his own about, like, all the pain he's been through.
Or they just show him covered in, like, scars. Like, there's an arrow sticking out of his head. It's like, hey.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the song Schmigadoon, opening?
I like Schmigadoon. It was good. I think it introduces the characters really well, and it gets across really well. Like, even Fred Armisen, who doesn't have an actual verse in it, he's just there. just standing behind Christian Chenoweth, like scared out of his pants. He's just like,
Christian Chenoweth is a bubble of joy everywhere else, but she's terrifying here.
She's terrifying. Like, this is giving me her and Descendants vibes, even though Descendants is a hot garbage DC movie. Ooh. Which also had Dove Cameron in it. So it's all connected.
It's all connected. Dove Cameron is actually my choice for Glinda in the movie version of Wicked. Actually, my choice for Elphaba's in this too.
Ariana DeBose.
Yeah, DeBose. Yeah, Ariana DeBose. She is my choice for Elphaba.
I know she has a song like later on. So I'm excited for that. She doesn't do much.
Hopefully she does. Hopefully a lot of people get a lot of stage time. But after Schmigadoon, they kind of have a small discussion. They go into an inn. It's weird, old-timey inn. They get separate rooms because sexual tension and all that. They're not married. And then Cecily Strong is left on red emotionally when she had a date, and then Keegan-Michael Key fell asleep through it. So she decides, fuck it, I'm going to the Tunnel of Love all by myself. And who's there but Aaron Tveit doing his best Billy Bigelow in a very high-waisted pants and a sweater. Yes. What do you think of his song, You Can't Tame Me?
I like it. I think Aaron Tveit plays it well. I think he's played that character like 6 different times. So I think he knows what's up with that type of song.
I will say he embraces a lot of those elements very well. It is like, especially when he just flat out just steals lines from If I Loved You, where it's like, hey, who put the idea of marrying you in my head?
Oh yeah.
And he's sung If I Loved You many times, he kind of knows his references and what this is going for.
Yeah, he knows exactly what he's doing. You can tell. And I understand how Cecily Strong reacts, because if Aaron Tveit did that to me, I'd probably react the same.
Okay, I was about to say, is he a sex bot? Is he an attractive man?
I'd say he's attractive. The pants are a little Kylo Ren-y. It's a little weird. Like, after seeing Kylo Ren in those pants, I was no longer attracted to Adam Driver.
Really?
No,
oh my god.
That one scene ruined it for me. I was like, he's
really
hot.
That's what turned it on for me.
And he stopped being hot. Like, no.
Come on.
Then I saw episode 9, and he continued to not be hot, because the movie's hot garbage, but...
I mean, The Last Jedi is a great movie.
It's a great movie. I don't care what anyone says.
Okay. You, finally!
I like The Last Jedi.
Someone that agrees with...
It's a
flawed
product.
The Last Jedi is a great movie.
But it's, like, a decent product.
I think it's above decent. I think it is the third best Star Wars movie.
I don't agree with that, but I have a soft
spot
for
episode 3
in my heart for some of the scenes. Yes, I like episode 3.
You're allowed to like episode 3. I get why people like episode 3.
I think the Anakin stuff is done really well, especially when Hayden Christensen doesn't have dialogue. It's only good when he doesn't have dialogue. It's just really saying something about that.
Okay, this is not related to anything, but
it's
you said Hayden Christensen, and this is Patreon, so we don't edit anything. But did you know there's a Romeo and Juliet film about warring pizza places?
Yes.
And it's Hayden Christensen and
Emma Roberts.
I hate it.
Yeah, I'm an avid viewer of How Did This Get Made? I've heard about it, and it takes place in Canada. It takes place in Canadian Little Italy, which is apparently a thing now.
Dear God. So Cecily Strong gets ogled by Aaron Tveit, and it's hot.
It's very hot.
And in that, we do a lot of like world building where she's like, "Oh, thanks for the song." He's like, "What song?" Like, it comes together well.
Yeah.
Aaron Tveit has always come across as a very intense man, especially outside of like films and all that. He seems like a very quiet, stoic feller. Speaking of quiet, stoic, subtle scenes, let's talk about Corn Pudding.
Corn Pudding.
This song is ridiculous. And I love it.
It's so stupid. They sing it twice. The gag is they had to sing it again when someone says corn pudding again.
Oh my god. I mean,
I love it.
You put the corn in the pudding and the pudding in the bowl. You put the bowl in your belly because it's good for the soul. I mean, come on.
I have
watched that one scene on its own at least 50 times since I first watched this episode.
Yeah, and Dove Cam really sells how amazing this is, even when it goes twice.
Yep.
Yay, more corn pudding song. And I'm just like, oh god.
And the way she specifically screams, "She ain't never heard no corn pudding!" It is incredible.
Oh yeah.
The thing is, Dove Cameron is not playing an analog of any specific character. The closest is probably Adol Annie from Oklahoma, but it's not quite as one-to-one as Aaron Tveit's to Billy Bigelow from Carousel or her dad from Oklahoma. So she's kind of allowed to play it however she likes, which I think is great, especially in the next episode where it gets a little saucy. We'll talk about that next week, though.
Then we
get attacked by a leprechaun with Martin Short.
My first thought seeing Martin Short as Leprechaun was I want to remake Leprechaun, the horror movie, starring Martin Short as the leprechaun. Because it scared the shit out of
me. Did it really scare you?
I was looking down for a hot minute while I was watching it, and all of a sudden I look up and Martin Short is a leprechaun. And I'm like, why did I check Twitter for a second?
It does come across as a jump scare, and I'm wondering if we ever see him again, or if that's just the last of him.
He's in the opening credits, though.
Yeah, I mean, as a character, do you think he's gonna be represented later, or is he just like, here's the rules, goodbye, I'm Martin Short, except I'm also very short.
Shorter Martin Short.
I'm the shortest Martin Short that ever shorted.
The shortest Martin Short that ever shorted.
And the problem with this song is it just is explaining things, so I couldn't even hum it to you, where every other song I could probably, scratch a tune out to it.
It's just, like, the vague lesson they need to learn, like, you need to find true love, and no one knows what that means, though.
Yeah, it does. It's sisterly love. That's at least what Disney is trying to tell us nowadays.
That's true. It's true. I do love my sister, so I get it.
Or Once Upon a Time style, motherly love.
Yeah, that was only the first season, though.
I've only ever watched the first season.
I've seen the first 5 to 6 seasons. I quit when Captain Nemo showed up as a main character, and I was like... And then he was later revealed, according to Tumblr, to be Captain Hook's father. So, I quit. I did a hard quit on that. And even though Colin O'Donoghue is a very pretty man.
You didn't stick around through the Elsa and Anna parts?
Oh, I watched the Elsa and Anna part. You weren't. It was not good. Though it did have Scott Michael Foster.
You mean it was just cynical marketing by the Disney Corporation?
100%. Same with the Oz thing. Because Oz the Great and Powerful had just come out.
Oh, you're right. I thought it was just like, we're still so angry we didn't own Wicked. We're so mad we don't have Wicked.
No. Also, her green skin was CG and it looked terrible.
I thought she just looked sweaty.
She
looked very sweaty.
You could see her sweat. It was really bad. I've seen behind the scenes of that show. It's just purple screens everywhere on every set. There's, like, in some furniture.
Yeah, anytime we're in the fairy tale world, it's like, what am I looking at? This is a fucking mess. Y'all didn't even try.
One night I was watching Game of Thrones with my family, and then afterwards, I watched Once Upon a Time the next day, because it airs the same night, and there happened to be dragons in the Once Upon a Time episode, but I had just watched Game of Thrones, which had better dragons. And Once Upon a Time dragons look like a video game cutscene animated by a 12-year-old boy with a budget of $6. I'm like...
Just $6. Not even $6.
No,
just
probably
a budget
six,
of $6.
$6 and a pack of gum if I'm being, like, generous. But by then, the budget was nothing. But Once Upon a Time does make Dorothy a lesbian, though.
It's a small wins.
Yeah, and it makes Mulan a lesbian.
Mulan wasn't given anything to... This is not the Once Upon a Time cast, but leave us a comment if you wanted to become one.
Yes,
me and Liz need another show to watch after this one.
I'm happy to trash talk this show and watch Colin O'Donoghue be hot once again.
I'll go a Jennifer Goodwin.
Oh, Jennifer Goodwin. Love her. And Josh Dallas, who's also very pretty. This show is full of very pretty people.
Very pretty people who are being fucked over by the special effects budget every week.
Yeah, they try.
They are trying. But that, speaking of which, that brings us to the end of our first Brigadoon episode. Liz, what do you think of this episode overall?
I liked it. I think it did a really good job setting everything up. The episodes are only 30 minutes, so they don't have a lot of time to, like, get the point across. And I think it does a good job setting up the conflict and the environment they're all in. I think it could have done more with the side characters they show randomly, but we've only scratched the surface of the show, so...
Mm-hmm.
So they could get better. I think Martin Short needs to stop jump scaring me. I don't have nightmares about Martin Short leprechaun.
Oh god, we can't be having no more Martin Short leprechaun nightmares. We can't be doing it.
No, but I want to sleep. I need to work.
But this is the first time I get to ask you this, and this is a very important question, Liz. You must take this very seriously. What is your cheese rating for this episode?
I've been waiting for this day since the moment you hired me. I'm giving a cheese rating. This is early on, so I can do the bullshit cheeses, too.
Yes,
I don't have
you
to get
can.
Creative. Okay.
You have no limitations.
Okay, I'm going to pull some bullshit. So I'm going to give it mozzarella. It's a nice, ooh, classic, gets the job done, and it does its job well.
The hand job of cheeses, I agree. I really like this episode. It is a really, really fun watch. I think it kind of lulls in the middle when it's like, I don't like seeing people fight. Like, it's not fun for me. And a lot of this episode is just a couple of actors that I really like fighting with each other.
Yeah.
Which isn't the most fun thing in the world. I'm hoping it'll ramp up to more entertaining things. And if episode 2 is anything to go by, it will. But the only cheese I can give this is cheese pudding.
Which is healthier or more unhealthy than a corn pudding?
Oh, it is much more unhealthy. I'm looking at this thing, and my God, it's like a savory bread pudding with soft white bread, shredded sharp cheddar cheese, baked in an eggy custard. It's a great, easy side dish for a cookout or barbecue. You only need a few basic ingredients and about 10 minutes prep time. Because I know when I make my best puddings, it takes 10 minutes.
I need more time for that. Oh, God. Sounds like a heart attack.
Yeah, you will die.
I don't want to die eating cheese.
Oh, that's the only way I plan to live.
That's
the only way I'll survive.
That'd be a cool way to go, though. He died
how
eating,
would you like to
he
die,
died doing
patrons?
What he loved, eating way too much.
Would you like to die eating cheese, patrons? Let us know in the comments. And what did you think of our first episode? And also, leave some comments welcoming Liz to Patreon with Cheese, our official co-host on this show. It's going to be a lot of fun. Liz, how did you like this first episode?
I liked it. This is cool.
You get the vibe. It's not too intense for you. I didn't ask all the hard-hitting questions on episode 1.
No interrogations yet. I'm assuming you have a well-thought-out plan to interrogate me and find everything about my life.
My plan is to slowly reveal every part of your personal life in small details over the course of 300 episodes. I've been going through this plan with Andrew. I'm about halfway done with it.
Is this because I made that Meatloaf video?
Yes.
Damn
yes, it is. Time to dox you. Time to dox you. I'm
Damn
so
it.
Sorry.
I blame Meatloaf. I'm kidding.
I have always blamed Meatloaf.
I blame QAnon.
Blame Meatloaf.
Q Meatloaf.
They should just rename QAnon Meatloaf.
Q Meatloaf.
You know what? Q Meatloaf. Liz, do you want to send us out and tell everyone we'll see him next week?
We'll see you next week for episode 2 of Schmigadoon.
Hell yeah. See you then.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.